Hello! Hey! I'm sorry, I'm complete speechless. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 137 of Fans of Power. I'm Joe Amato, and I'm here with Tyler T-Rex, Beck, and Baker. And, oh, God, Tyler, that's the first time I've ever flubbed up an intro, ever. Well, there you go. It happens.
It keeps us unprofessional, which is kind of how I like us to keep our podcast. We're not professional. We're not pretending to be professional. We're just average Joes, no pun intended, doing a podcast about various things. So, you know, it's not like we're trying to fool people into thinking that we're doing this from a studio in the south side of Chicago.
You know, not even close. Like that,
where we got secretaries and a producer sitting in the booth next to us, you know, or something like that.
Somebody handed me a water. Like, thank you. There we go. Got it set.
They're coming into the studio to sit with us, but pretending to sit in a room that looks like their home. You know, or something like that. You know, we're not trying to pull the curtain over people's eyes about what we're trying to do.
No, not at all. But well, first let me say hello to some of the people in the chat room. We got Zentron, Zen Brown, and JSP in the chat room. So thank you guys for joining us. Now, as for anything new, I was sitting there trying to think of any of the recent stuff. I know that Super 7 showed those like a cool 2-pack. Of their reaction figures, and they have She-Ra and they have Hordak, and Hordak's head, like for the figure, looked a little wide, but I was like,
looks a little too big for its body, almost.
Yeah, just a little too big, but I mean, hell, it's still cool they're doing it, and of course, the art on the packaging is being done by Jason Edmiston, and that guy, oh my god, I mean, he's the one that's been doing all the card art. He's the one that did that for the carrying case for those reaction He-Man figures. He did that as well, so kind of gives you like the feeling of the old days when we got that really awesome, amazing box art for our figures and the posters. So that's good that he's got that. Also, Keshi, I think that's what Super 7 has made, are these little Keshi figures, which are like muscle, and I think that they did some of the Horde. They got Hordak, Catcher, Shadow Weaver, Grizzlord, Leech, Mantenna, and a Horde Trooper. And I think for the Great Rebellion, they got She-Ra, Glimmer, Queen Angela, Cast a Spell, and Frost. I don't know if there was others. I didn't know if you know if there's others. But
that's a tie-in with the previous muscle-type figures they've done before, since it's called Keshi or whatever.
You know what's weird? I'll be honest and completely ignorant about it. This Keshi, whatever it is, I mean, it's I guess, around the size of muscle, but I even thought that they did something else in that Keshi style. So this is something that, well, I never ordered any of them, those Keshi ones. I don't know if they did Keshi He-Man and Muscle He-Man figures, or if they're supposed to be the same. I just thought they were cool, and they come in multiple colors, but I'm completely ignorant about them, I guess.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just saw pictures of it, and I thought they looked like the previous figures, which was cool, but I haven't bought any, because if I bought any, where the hell am I going to put them in this place? I mean, I'm officially out of room for classics. Like, I've come to that conclusion this weekend that I have no more room for my figures on the shelf. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do when the next.
Can you do some wall shelves? Could you, if you moved a poster or something, do a wall shelf?
I'd have to, I probably would have, but see, I've got artwork over here. I've got the commemoratives over here. I've got posters right here. I've got a mixed bag of stuff on this shelf here. I guess I possibly could do that, but then that would put the vintage stuff even higher up. I probably couldn't fit the castles on the top shelf. I've still got to get Quake on the Evil Warrior shelf there. I was looking around yesterday. I can't do it. Normally I've been able to do a MacGyver. I don't know how I do it, but I managed to squeeze in every new figure thinking, I don't know if I can do it this time. But this time I'm like, I've got to get myself a corkscrew, a paperclip, and some tinfoil, and try to figure out how the hell am I going to get Quake on the shelf with his staff and boulder.
You know, oh, yeah. The life of a collector. Yeah, we're always suffering trying to figure.
Like, it's just that shelf, because I got the Snake Man on that shelf, too. And I'm like, when Card comes in, I'm like, where am I going to put him? I have no room to put him. You know, everyone else, I think I can work it on the other shelves.
And it all depends sometimes on the styling of the shelf. And, oh, first let me say also to hello to Grimbot in the chat room and Toki Deathhammer. They both joined us as well, so thank you both for joining us. Now, no, that's what I noticed is sometimes it all depends on the depths of the shelves as well, because if you have one that goes back pretty far, you can sometimes create that step effect.
done that. That's how I've got them set up. I've got deep shelves and they're still packed out. So.
Wow. So yeah, you're gonna have a hell of a time. But well, that was the stuff with the Kishi. Then Funko showed those cool. It's like they're pop vinyl figures, and they showed a Ram Man and a Stinkor, and I think the Stinkor is gonna stink. So they look pretty damn cool. It's like those are kind of out of nowhere. Expecting those two guys.
Especially to see Faker. That was cool to see that.
Oh, yeah. And then in the vinyl with the Y spelling, they're doing the two-pack of Skeletor with Faker. So I think I thought
that's what you were talking about. Are they not part of the same?
No, they're different. The vinyl with the Y is that they have a weird kind of body shape, but they're the two-packs. Like, they had He-Man and Trapjaw, they had Sorceress and Beast Man, and now they got Skeletor and Faker. But as for the Ram Man and Skeletor, those are the figures. They're like figure, you know, like a good buff body, but then the real big heads, and they're doing a Ram Man and a Stinkor. So it's a different style of figure, but they're still cool.
I'm so far removed from all this news, like the new stuff that's not an actual figure. You know, these like kind of trinket things. I just kind of feel like I'm so unenergized for the stuff that's not a classic figure or a vintage type figure or a beautiful piece of artwork. I'm just not excited at all for it. I mean, it looks cool when I see it, but I'm like, I have no desire to buy that stuff. And I hate thinking that way, but it's just when you see something, well, damn it. When you see something like this, it's just hard for me to get excited over little pint-sized things that just sit there. You know, I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm so unenthusiastic when we talk about some of this new stuff that's not classic. But I mean,
everything, like I said, is it has a different audience. Some people will get into all of it. Some just like, things that appeal more to them. It doesn't
Had this happened during like the 2000 X line, I'd have bought everything. But I just feel like I'm at that point that I don't know where I would put it.
I've noticed that when people do kind of run out of room, because it's the same thing with me, it's almost like we become a little more selective because we rarely have any kind of room. So you're like, well, if I'm going to choose anything, maybe I'll go more for the classics or the 5.5-inch figures. And as cool as it would be to get all the reaction and the Keshi and the muscle and vinyls, not everybody can do it. I mean, for those who can, fantastic. But no, you're right. Just sometimes it's just, hell, when you run out of room, you're getting selective.
Yeah, and I just kind of feel like it's not important to have, and I know I've said this before on an older episode too. I just don't find it's important to have everything that's got the Masters logo slapped on there, and just buy anything and everything, because I, like you said, I've just become a lot more selective about what I put my money into, and if it's not original artwork or classics, I mean, I came across the vintage figures at a comic book show in Charlotte a couple weeks ago. And, of course, I knew when I asked how much these things were, these guys were going to try and ask for your apartment and your car and
basically
your firstborn son. And I remember when he asked them how much Hordak and Snakeface were. These were all men on card figures.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a lot. And I said, yes, I'm aware. I just want to know how much they are. He said, well, I could probably do about $400 for both of them. I thought, he just assumes that I'm just some random guy. I remember He-Man. How much you want for him? I'm got like a massive question mark over my head. I'm drooling out the side of my mouth, and I'm scratching the side of my head at the same time. And
as if they'll do that. Oh, yeah, like I said, the very limited stuff that I'd get in my area, because I told you we rarely get anything, but if something does pop up when it's Masters of the Universe, and it could be an old vintage figure with no armor, mismatched arms, wrong arms, you know, like they'll pop on a Fisto arm onto Clawful or some nonsense, whatever it is. I was like, how much you want for that? Oh, it's $20. I was like, $20? Really? I was like, why is that? Oh, this is old stuff. This is old He-Man. And yeah, I said, but it's the wrong armor. I said, and the arms messed up. No, but people pay a lot. And you know, that's when I figured, okay, done with this guy.
Arguing with these. I'm just not going to. That's why it was cool to see it. There was a lot of He-Man stuff. A lot of it was, you know, the current stuff, but there was some vintage, and it was cool to see, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 mint on card figures, especially Snakeface and Hordak. And I just felt like I could have argued, you know, dude, I'll give you 3 for both of them. I sure as hell ain't giving you 4. Like Snakeface, I've seen 150, 170, close to 200. Hordak, yeah, I'm not going to argue, be about $100. I'll give you 3 for both. I ain't paying $400. I mean, but even then, I didn't want to go and spend. I only went to go meet Mark Bagley, and that was it. I didn't go to really buy a whole lot of stuff. So, but it was just one of those things where I hate that mentality that the majority of people who are dealing in that stuff are just, they're still, after all these years, are still just slapping massive prices, just hoping that people who were nostalgic for the 80s are going to, you know, essentially blind buy and dump out their wallet, you know, all over.
That's what they're hoping. Oh, sure. That is what they're hoping. They don't usually come across people who have a good knowledge on what they're collecting. And when they do, then they get pretty silent, but they still don't want to barter or make any good deals with you.
Business, you're a businessman. You're doing it to make money. I understand that. But I just, you know, as if like people still this day are thinking that you can't find options on eBay. You know, I don't know. That just infuriated me. I walked away pretty quickly when he told me that.
I would have too.
Yeah,
I would have walked away quickly too. But yep, I'm staying hydrated because I don't want to dehydrate again because that happens so quickly when you don't even know it. You don't realize you're not drinking as much as you should. Then you're getting pumped up with IVs and whew. So yeah, I got a super cold one right here with this crazy over the 100 degrees weather we've been having and humidity. So I'm good and I'm set and I'm good to go. But you know, past all that stuff, like I said, great artwork on the packaging for the ones with the two packs with Jason Edmiston. That's the saving grace for most things I've been seeing. I mean, every one of his pieces could be an amazing poster, so that would be good. But, well, that's pretty much all the new news. But, so now we had a couple different topics. I mean, we're going to revisit Stratos. We'll talk about one of the Eye of the Storm mini comic because I don't think we ever have, and see what else would pop up. But I figured we'd start with Stratos because, you know, I like picking... I always mess with Dan Rice's son, Philip. Philip loves Stratos. This is his guy. That's his figure. That's his character. But it's not that, okay, you know how sometimes we're like, okay, let's see if we can not convert or turn the other person to maybe enjoy a character more. Because I of course, do want to hear, you know, the positives about Stratos. See, as a kid, for me, getting him, just the figure did, I mean, I'm just being honest, out of all the vintage, you know, original figures when I got him, Stratos he didn't pop for me. He didn't catch my eye. I mean, I understand a great, you know, like a design color art on the 8-back and stuff. And I know when we eventually got the card art form, really cool and looks cool in the mini comic. But damn it, when I was a kid and I liked playing, I liked the ones, yes, you could say I'm a caveman-like because I like weapons. But I liked having the ones doing weapons in Stratos. I used to just fly around and I was like, he had no weapon and nothing. And then when it came to the cartoon, you know, I know he shoot out blasts out of his hands, and hell, I know he shot out blasts in the mini comic too, but I felt like maybe if there was a weapon he got, it could have made him cooler for me. And I still was confused with the character himself. His design, you know, he's got these wings, and of course for the figure, they're strapped on like an attachment. And even as a kid, I said, okay, I understand he's supposed to be a bird kind of warrior, and he's got a jetpack, but does he need the jetpack to fly? Would he not fly if he didn't have the jetpack? Are these wings real wings? It's just, he was a confusing character for me. I'm being really honest. And it's not that I hate him and say he really sucks. Like I said, I like giving Philip a little crap, but he's just never appealed to me. And when NYP came around, they did jazz him up. You know what I mean? With like the rocket boosters, and he made him a little more intense. He felt like he could fight a little more. Still didn't have a weapon, but I don't know. I mean, I'll pass it to you. You can tell me your original thoughts on him. And like I said, I'm not hating him, but he just never did it for me for whatever reason.
We had a discussion very similar to this not too long ago where Joe felt the need to dump the kids' books and tell them, hey, Stratos is stupid.
Yeah, that's why I want you to give the positives on it so we can hear about, you know.
But that's the thing, though. You have to remember, you know, as I've said plenty of times before, I caught the tail end of the cast of characters. So all the characters that were available in the cartoon or what would have been considered the flagship characters were I could not find. I did have Attila and a Man-at-Arms, Skeletor, Evil-Inn, but I didn't have Merman. I didn't have Triclops. I didn't have Trapjaw. I didn't have the original Faker. I did get the second Faker.
Okay.
Eddie He-Man, and I didn't have Stratos, and I wanted Stratos. That was one of the original heroes that I desperately wanted and would get at a flea market in Pennsylvania. I thought the character was an amazing character. I thought it would have been so cool to have owned Stratos. The one that I did get was missing everything. He didn't have his jetpack. He didn't have the wings. Nothing. I was
That must have been really bland.
Well, not to me it wasn't, because it was, oh my God, I found Stratos, and my granddaddy bought him for me like dirt cheap across the street when we were visiting Pennsylvania. So I was so thankful. And then we went to the video store and rented The Greatest Adventures of All on VHS. It was a great day for He-Man.
Okay.
But I just felt like he's a character that I think there's a lot of appreciation for the character. Like I think of, you know, I know artists like Kevin Sharp and Axel are both fans of the character. I think there is a good, solid appreciation for the character. I just don't feel like it's... I feel like if they were to do a new He-Man series and they were starting with, like, the bare-bones cast, like, the kind of the essentials, but Stratos wasn't a part of it, I think that would piss off a lot of fans because, you know, he's one of the originals. If you're going to start from the beginning and do a new He-Man comic book, cartoon, or whatever the case may be, Stratos is one of the three original heroic warriors that teams up with He-Man. Like that's a must. He's an essential character as much as Man-at-Arms and Teela is to the canon. Like you have to have Stratos. You have to have Avion and the Avion Warriors. I didn't think him to be an odd looking character. I thought he was like very. I didn't really get the whole eight thing when I heard that for the first time. You know, and then I look more closely at the cross-sell artwork because I know the Four Horsemen, when they re-sculpted them for 2000X, like Eric Treadaway was like pushing, I think, to say that they wanted to add the simian aspects. I'm like, simian? I guess I kind of get that from his face, but for the most part, I never got any kind of ape-like, monkey-like features to Stratos. Like, you look at him in Filmation in 2000X, he doesn't have any kind of, you know, ape-like features. Unless you look at the cross-cell artwork, and he's kind of hunched over, but so is Beastman.
Beastman. Right.
Yeah, so that's why I don't quite get, of course, people think Beastman, maybe his color scheme is originally from, like, an orangutan, you know, with the white paint and the orange fur and everything like that. But I think he's a great character. I mean, he's never been like a favorite character, but to me, he's an essential, like Triclops and Trapjaw. You have to have him. And I thought the idea of a flying character, I didn't think he was any less or any lackluster because of Buzz Off, because I would definitely probably pick Buzz Off over Stratos, but that's not to slight Stratos.
What about the wings? I mean, maybe not for you, but did those wings ever confuse you? Because always seen them real, like I realized, okay, that's not what's making him fly. It's, I guess, the jetpack, or did he float?
And I didn't see Reign of the Monster as a kid. That was when I got it set on bootleg. But I saw Betrayal of Stratos, which was the first time, you know, and this was, I think, probably 1989, I think, or 1990 when I saw the episode for the first time. Prior to that, I'm seeing episodes where Stratos is just seen flying and there to help out He-Man, and that's it. I'm not seeing any explanation as to how he can fly. I just buy the fact that this guy can fly. So the Staff of Avion, I don't look at that as the immediate canon. I look at the Egg of Avion as the source of their power. And it does kind of feel like if you use that they can't be away from it, which I think just works as a plot device for that episode. I like to think that any Avion warrior can fly, you know, great distances and not have to rely on a power source, unless you kind of dig a little deeper into the Staff of Avion and the Egg of Avion that, you know, I feel like you can kind of come up with an idea of how you can use those to enhance the abilities of Avion warriors. Other than that, I like to think that they can just fly on their own because that's what makes them Avion warriors. They're flying warriors. They're humans that fly like birds. They use wings to help, you know, change their direction in the sky. And they wear rocket packs that, you know, enhance the flight ability.
I think that's just, you know, it's unfortunate, but sometimes you'll have something that you just remember when, you know, from when you're a kid and it sticks with you. And it's just all the things about him when I looked at him just were just so confusing and just bland to me that it's like, I couldn't get rid of the stupid grudge. MYP almost made me get rid of it. And like I said, it's not that I completely hate the character, but it's like, okay, here's another thing. I was spoiled by like the 8-card back, with the art and how they looked. Even okay, it was Stratos, Beastman, and Merman were my biggest pissed off figures, basically, as a kid. Because I was like, God, they just don't look as awesome as this card back art. Like Merman looked, oh, wow, talk about just a complete different look with the head, and just he looked like more like a cat character to me with that was green. But then Beastman, he looked so vicious and awesome, and even Stratos, he did. It was like, damn. And the figure, while he still had a whip and was cool, but the biggest things that pissed me off about Beastman and Stratos was, they had those gnarly looking feet, like if you will, like claws. And but then we didn't get that in the figure. We got like it looks like a boot or something, a boot foot. And that pissed me off. I wish that we could have got the feet, with at least toenails. You know what I mean? Just look like,
Well, that's why I
gripping.
appreciate when the 2008 figures did come out, that they were really pushing to get a lot of those aspects that we didn't get, and I felt that the Horsemen were very respectful in that, that Beastman, not the spitting image of the eight back, but definitely pushed the beast aspects a lot more. And we got the Merman, very reminiscent of the eight card back, and then Stratus's card back looks ape-like a bit, at least how he's kind of hunched over and everything, a little bit in the face.
Yeah, because like on just real quick, like from his 8-card back, see, it's a thing. He looked more intense there, and I know his feet weren't clawed like on the 8-card back like Beastman's were, but when you looked in the mini comic, he had the clawed feet. So definitely the mini comic got me more excited about, damn, he could look so damn cool. And of course, Ram Man was later on, he was another one that was just a big to me. I was like, oh my God, look how intense he looks on this, the card back art. And then we get this real squatty of the faces, no detail. I'm like, what happened from that to this? When I'm thinking about some things that really let me down when I was a kid. Still.
And that would be something I would be interested to know as to, and I'm sure maybe somebody has dug a little deep and maybe spoke to somebody, but the transition of the cross cell artwork is done. I'd like to know at what point was that done as opposed to the final look of the figure. Are the figures, are they really aiming for Merman to look like that as opposed to the face sculpt and feet that we got, and Beastman to be a lot wider and just thicker looking, with the neck piece being up a lot higher on him, like he is in filmation, whereas this was kind of like lower down and his head's a lot more prominent up. I would love to know, were there two different departments and they're just looking at different pictures and something got mixed up and these guys drew it this way, these guys made the figures this way? Because that was a big thing with fans of the toy line, because I would look at the figures and see pictures, because at least a lot of the figures that I was getting in the late 80s still had, pictures of like Beastman and He-Man and Skeletor. I mean, so you could see pictures of the stuff. So I would, and like Triclops and Trapjaw were two that I remember seeing on the back of the mini comics for the longest time and thinking that they looked epic as hell, like Triclops' color scheme, the metallic sword, and how Trapjaw looked so menacing on the back of the mini comic, like the cross cell artwork that was used. And to get them in person, they looked a lot like Filmation, which I was thrilled to death. Like, I clearly saw the difference. I wasn't, oh God, worst day ever. I just saw Filmation. The same thing with Manny Faces. When I saw Manny Faces cross artwork, I thought, oh boy. But then when I got this figure in hand for the first time, I thought, oh my God, he looks like Filmation. So it didn't bother me, because Filmation was so important to me that the figures look more like that as opposed to the cross artwork. But I completely sympathize with any fan that grew up in the 80s that caught the line in its earlier years and saw it progress, and you're not getting exactly what's on the back of that card. I mean, I completely understand that. I've been so much more accepting of the differences of things that we were told we were going to get as opposed to what we got. I mean, the He-Man movie is another example. I just was accepting of everything that I had access to and was not going to question it. I really can't think of anything off the top of my head of being disappointed that, how come it doesn't look like this, or why did we get that instead of this? It just,
Yeah, it's because, you know, for some of the early ones, like I mentioned with Ram Man and with Stratos and Beast Man and Merman, those were ones that, you know, I had this little issue with and I kind of got over them. Stratos is the one that was just tougher too. But, you know, what's funny is speaking of something that's like different is, okay, like Snake Mountain. You know, I know a lot of people said, damn, Snake Mountain, the toy looked nothing like the cartoon. I wish we'd have got the cartoon. I'm going to be honest. I love the hell out of that Snake Mountain. You
Me
know,
too.
like, my God. I mean, it's like at no point they say, oh, I wish it had, you know, went up like this. It's like, but how would you play with this mountain peak and what would you do? I mean, would I be playing like how I did with Viper Tower where there's nothing to do on Eternia's playset? But that damn playset for Snake Mountain, it was so fun. You're using your imagination. You had this crazy microphone where kids loved using that and changing their voice and all evil and the traps and the pits and the bridge and even the Muppet face of the snake, you know, or that face on Snake Mountain. I loved it. So, but you're right. There's some people that hated the look of that Snake Mountain playset. They said, my God, it doesn't look like the cartoon. It's stupid. But I guess that's when, you know, you're right. Just different ways you experience something first and how your imagination will run wild with it, I guess.
Well, I mean, to me, as long as the giant snake was there, that's what mattered to me. Because I had seen the cartoon first, and then my mom came home with Castle Grayskull, Snake Mountain, and Panthor from a lady at work whose son was getting out of He-Man, so they gave it to me for free.
Oh, no kidding, really.
Yeah, and my mom comes home from work, and here you go, Tyler. And
You must have pissed your pants. That must have been great.
oh my God, it was I'll never. And it was in the same neighborhood that I'm living in right now, just up the street and over, I think, a block or two. In this one brick house that's still to this day, I always look at that house as the house that introduced me to He-Man and the real Ghostbusters. And yeah, that was it. Didn't have the microphone though, but
Oh, you didn't get to exp okay.
no, I wasn't aware of that until I think the early days of the internet, or seeing early pictures of like the box art and stuff before He-Man.org and things like that,
Oh, so
like
you
early.
didn't even know? You're saying you didn't even know it had a
No,
microphone?
no, no. Everything else was intact. The bridge, the net, the snake, the trap door, the stickers on the inside, everything was intact. Castle Grayskull was intact except for the laser cannon, and I think the weapons rack. And the battle trainer, the things you could hit back and forth. Other than everything else, the elevator, the little bat that was on the elevator, the ladder, the flag, all that stuff was intact. But to me, Snake Mountain, like when I'm thinking it's got to be a big snake, and to me the place that had a big snake that you can move around, so to me that was Snake Mountain. It's not the spitting edge of Filmation, but I was just accepting of that. I'm like, this is Skeletor's hideout, and I just use my imagination to fill in the gaps of the interior. Hell, I used to think that that green pool of the snakes that were on the inside were baby versions of Tongue Lasher and Rat Boar, because it was a purple
Really?
and an
That's cool.
orange snake-like lizard thing, and that was around the time I'd gotten Tongue Lasher and Rat Boar. So I saw them, like, maybe that's what they looked like when they were, little, and then they grow into these big muscular snake men. That was, that's how my brain was thinking. I was
You
trying
know,
to
I'll have
picture
to
that.
relook at that sometime. I mean, I haven't looked at that sticker on that part for years, but I'll have to see that and see,
Yeah,
like you said, how your
yeah.
mind was running with that
But
idea.
I just, that's how I was. I didn't question a whole lot. I just accepted everything, and being, 3 and 4 years old in 1987 and 88, and then 89, you do wonder, did they ever make this guy? Did they ever make that guy? How come they never made a Horde Trooper? At least in my mind, and it would be in the mid 90s when I found out they did make a Horde Trooper. So I was just more appreciative of anything I could get my hands on. That's why I never questioned Stratus's look. I never questioned, anything that I got. I was just so happy to have it that I could experience something that I was learning relatively quickly that He-Man was no longer available in stores at an early age. So.
Were you much for well first oh let me say hello to Jason Bean, Justin Hune, and Adam Gabbard in the chat room. Thank you for joining us as well.
Turn out, guys.
Yeah, but okay, there's this thing with the voice, you know, with that kind of Sean Connery thing at MYP. Was that something that you were right behind from the get-go? Because I liked it, but I know some fans mocked it, made fun of it, and saying, oh,
Well, and that's what killed a little bit for me. Like, I remember when I heard it, I thought that sounds exactly like Sean Connery. I kind of felt like, why? And of course, everybody's making fun of it. And when you're making fun of it, it kind of makes it hard to enjoy when everyone's looking at this interpretation as a joke. And I didn't like that, and that's why I didn't like Clawful. And of course, I grew to like Stratus's voice. I loved his interpretation, but it just felt like, you know, when you're hearing it, the guys in the booth are they laughing at this guy trying to do a Sean Connery impression? You know, because it just kind of feels. I mean, it worked for the show, but when we all know he's clearly doing a Sean Connery, you kind of wonder, are they doing this as they think it's funny? You know, hey, do it as Sean Connery. No, that's great. Man, we'll all laugh and carry on. But
I would love to know behind that what made them choose. You're right. I would love to know what was behind the choice to do that type of voice for him, because you're right. Sean Connery's voice is still, you know, it's so distinct. That to hear anybody, you know when somebody's imitating. So right when I heard it, I mean, I'll be honest, because I didn't know all the stuff back then when I first seen it. I thought it was Sean Connery doing the voice. I thought, oh my God, Sean Connery's, I did. Here's the funnier thing. I thought Sean Connery was doing Stratos, and swear to God, I thought Jaleel White, who is Urkel, I thought he was doing Orko. And that's before I knew anything about the internet and was clicking on to find stuff.
I didn't think that. I just knew that.
I did.
What they were going for.
I thought it for me. That's what I thought. Of course, then here comes the internet when I get on and I could check out all this stuff. And hell, I'm sure they probably had it in the ending credits, which I usually never paid attention to ending credits of anything. It's like cartoon's over, I'm done. But yeah, I thought it was Sean Connery and I thought it was Urkel doing Orko.
Man, to have lived in your world, to have thought such silly nonsense and to believe it.
Yeah.
Self-evident, and we hold these truths to be self-evident. There we go.
And how cool. See, that's the thing. And I remember how excited I was when I eventually did find out, you know, Christopher Judge, the one who did Teal'c from Stargate, right when I heard that voice, here's the even cooler thing. When Zodak first showed up in MYP, and I'm sitting there watching, and he spoke, my dad, he loved Stargate, just like I, you know, back in the day when it was on, did. Right when he heard it, he's like, is that Teal'c? And I was like, I listened again. It's like, oh my God, that has to be. I know that. But, you know, there's a distinct, powerful voice. So I guess one out of three, we're right about one. The other two, nope. I didn't know if you were a Stargate fan and if you ever watched and heard
Teal'c. I know the character you're talking about, but I was never big of even the Stargate movie for that. So, but I know the character you're talking about from Stargate.
Yeah.
Show, but, I mean, the voices for MYP, I think overall were pretty good. I have issues with several of them, but I will say I think, you know, overall it was pretty solid. You know, Cam Clark's, I liked his He-Man better than his Adam.
You like about Adam? Did you think it was too nasally, whiny, or what was it you didn't like?
Yeah, he just sounded, you know, very, very kid-like. And even though Adam is a young boy, but he's a young man though. He's turning 18. He ought to sound, I don't know. I don't blame Cam. I blame that interpretation of Prince Adam on the show. It's very unlikable. The entire show. We've said this before. It's a very, you can't get behind that interpretation of Adam. Filmation gets it right because we're shown multiple times the struggles Adam goes through maintaining this persona to throw people off that he's not He-Man. Whereas this one just comes off as, no, he really, no matter the responsibility or the issues going on, he still comes off as, you know, lazy, not like, doesn't look like he's pretending. It looks like, yeah, he really don't give a rat's ass. Or he just kind of comes off as still, you know, whiny or a bit bratty at times, where you just feel like, I can't be sympathetic to this interpretation of Adam, like not once. You know, it's just not an enjoyable take on the character. I mean, this is looking back at it. And when the show was, a regular show, it wasn't a whole lot that I was willing to admit I didn't like, because you're so thankful to have a new He-Man show, you know, other than Clawful, which I was pretty upfront about hating that.
And, almost everybody was. Loved his look, but
conversely, you know, hated, you know. But for the most part, I tried to be as accepting as I possibly could, because you just felt like it was blasphemous to be negative on anything that the show was giving. When King Grayskull was introduced, I was pretty negative on that, you know, immediately, because I was expecting Hero, and then that my hatred for that character just grew. Teela, I just found unbearable. It didn't take long for me to feel that way, but since I kind of felt that, you know, she was, you know, so problematic information, I just kind of like, well, they're just kind of following what the character's kind of been previously written as. But Stratos, I think overall has been treated pretty well. I was not a fan of the of the bird, like the big bird eyes in the EMV Creations book that they did. Like one of the last books they did of that series was like a Stratus story. And I just thought, like, to take the masks off and they had these big bird eyes, I was just, if whoever came up with that, I apologize to any, to the gentleman or young woman that came up with that idea. Me personally, it was something I didn't feel like I needed to know what was underneath Stratus, man. As far as I was concerned, like when you see Hawk and Delora and
yeah, we've seen their faces, kind of some of their people. Their
faces. They have normal faces. They don't have big eyes or big bird eyes. That's why I felt like this doesn't work at all. And even though it's done for 2000X, you're thinking, oh no, this is a new interpretation. But to me, I just felt like they're humans. They have human eyes. They don't have anything different than what, you know, Stratus has got his you know, beard that he's got there and would have regular eyes. And I like Lou Scheimer's voice as Stratus. I thought it was, and it was consistent. His portrayal of Stratus was so precise and consistent throughout both season one and two.
I didn't change like some of the other characters, how the voice is.
That's why I could, like, why the hell can't Lou keep a consistent or a consistency with Mechanac and some of the other, you know, hero or evil warriors that he would portray? I just felt like it was, but Stratus, you know, it's King Randor and Stratus are similar, but they're very different. And you can clearly tell it's Lou, but he does such a great job of making them different voices for different characters, but you can clearly tell it's him. It shows the talent of the man. But I love his portrayal of Stratus. I felt like Stratus was given a lot of good moments in Filmation. He may not be the prominent character. I mean, I think to me he gets too really, I mean, Reign of the Monsters, okay. It's never been a favorite of mine when I saw it, because I just never really, Joe loves the
I love Malcrum.
Malcrum, God, I can't believe
I love that son of that. I always said Malcrum was like Superman turned into a horse. Just all these abilities and powers and things, and wind breath and then the eye beam. I loved it.
It was the blonde hair. The blonde hair on him just felt like so out of place.
But you know what? It's just fantasy. I mean, it was different. But
that's why, like, with some of Filmation's created characters, I could get behind a lot of them. But like with the Kraken and Search for the VHO, I could have gotten behind that if they didn't put a chicken beak or a bird.
No, that one was a doozy. But something about Malcolm, yeah. I just loved the whole damn design. I mean, it was a frightening one with me, as much as people want to laugh at Shigora too. But I was like, when Shigora got pissed, when I was like, Shigora, oh my God.
I like Shigora. It's a simple look, but it works. But with the Malcolm, the blonde hair takes away from the ferocity and intensity, even though he's animated very well.
It worked. I mean, for me, it worked with the hair. I know some didn't like it. They're like, well, what's he doing with this lovely, big, long, blonde hair? But, I mean, hell, like I said, I liked it. And then it makes you wonder, what else could they have done? Had spikes going down his head or something weird? But I guess that's the what could have been or what could have worked. But
and maybe I would have felt different had I seen the episode as a kid. But, you know,
you never know.
Most of the episodes I saw as a kid, there were some I didn't like, grew to like. But most of them I did like. And there are some that I saw as an adult that I had never seen before that I grew to appreciate. But that's one character. The episode's fine. But
one that I couldn't get behind? I always found some of these. You probably know, again, here comes you with the expertise on it. There was a particular episode where there was this fire demon monster. And I was like, oh, this thing looks so stupid.
With Stone Mountain.
Oh, is that? Oh, now, were you behind that? Because as a kid, immediately I said, oh, this thing just looks so stupid. It wasn't scary. It just, I thought it was one of the worst things as a kid. I
saw that episode as a teenager, and I had never seen that. It came with Evil Seed. It was a VHS that came with Wizard of Stone Mountain and Evil Seed.
No way. Okay.
Yeah, and I actually liked that episode. I know James Etalk has been quite open about how poor the final look. And he's got a video of showing what the original design looked. And to me, the original design doesn't come off as any more different than...
I'd love to see that. No kidding. So James didn't even like it. I'd love to see the original.
On the official He-Man YouTube channel. I mean, he likes the original look. And of course, because this character's supposed to embody the devil. And you really can't have a character that's very evil and demonic in a children's cartoon. Even though the Locust character... that's there to talk Malik into selling his soul. I mean, look, we're talking about an
episode. I liked him.
Soul for Love. That's pretty damn demonic for a children's cartoon, which is why I like the episode so much. So that way, when you know the ultimate, the spirit of evil shows up to collect Malak's soul, and the Locust is sitting there rubbing his hands together, I'm buying it because of the situation we're in.
I liked him. He looked like a little lion demon with wings. Yeah, there was something about that
character. And Alan Oppenheimer does such a great job of playing this demonic voice with, and the mannerism rubbing his chin, like, well, there is a price, a very high price. He's like, then we have a deal, Malak. And
that would be a cool-ass little figure to come with something.
He would be an awesome figure. And that's why I get why the spirit of evil, it's laughed at, but I appreciate and liked it because I like what the character represented, you know. And and then when you come to find out that it was supposed to look differently, which to me did come, it's like kind of like a thin black shadow with red eyes, and kind of that's what it looks like, a tall thin black shadow with red eyes and horns. That's supposed to be the spirit of evil, and instead you get this, you know, walking flame. Which to me, it's fire. I mean, hell, fire. It makes sense. So that's why I never felt it to be anything that's like, oh, it's kind of silly to get behind, you know. And granted, you know, the selling your soul to evil, the deal is broken due to Kareen, you know, offering herself up to save Malak. Like, love conquers all. It is for kids, people. It can't be like watching The Omen, you know.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Or something like that.
So, having somebody jumping off Castle Grayskull or something, or
yeah, you just yeah, it's like, it's all for you, Malak. It's all for you. And then Kareen hangs herself right there. You know, it's, you know, you have to be a little understanding of what we're dealing with, people. Yes, it would be cool to see something that looked like, well, Krall, the king of demons, that's in Betrayal of Stratos. That looks like the devil.
Now, I would love that.
That because Alan Oppenheimer does the voice of Krull, which I swear, Joe, I almost feel like you're dodging because either you haven't seen it or you don't like the episode. Betrayal of Stratos is an episode we must do commentary for because it's the
best Stratos episode. Hold up. How about we do it next week? Because like I said, not that I completely hated him, because, you know, MYP had me enjoying him a little more. And like I said, maybe next week we will do that. We'll do a commentary for the
Stratus church. Stratus is given a really, and it's so underappreciated, that episode. And Stratus's whole story of being cast out because Hawk made a deal with Skeletor for riches and selling him out and setting him up as a traitor.
Well, we'll do it. Hold it up.
I love that episode.
And that's our thing. Bottle it up. Okay. Bottle that up, and we'll save that for next week. We'll do a commentary. We'll do a commentary for it. But no, yeah, Stratus, if I was to ever envision him with his helmet off, I would have pictured him just like how we've seen him in Filmation, just like all the other people. They just look like you said, people. Now, I know Mark Taylor's early design of Stratos, I believe it wasn't supposed to be goggles. Those were like bird eyes that were drawn. That look that we see, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're bird eyes.
You know what? If that were the case, and like when we get that book of Mark's He-Man stories, I'm more than fine of accepting anything that Mark wanted us to have or
wanted
for us. I'm going to accept it like the Bible. I'm going to accept every word that he says, and I will make that, you know, on top of my personal canon of the things that we all pick and choose what we like. But for the most part, I accept the events of He-Man in the 80s and She-Ra and New Adventures, Elements of 2000X, and definitely sure as hell accept everything from the live-action movie. But I'll also accept a separate canon universe from what Mark had intended for us to have, like his whole...
Oh, sure.
You know, a battle of using technology over magic. Magic considered more evil to use. And I mean, I like that. I can't wait for him and Rebecca to get us any kind of new news on that book. You know,
yeah, maybe something will be coming up hopefully in a couple months. That would be fantastic to see what's going on. But no, yeah, as for Shadow, it's been our, like I said, our character profile. He was just somebody that, you know, never really just got me too excited, but I can understand the appeal of him. Like I said, it's not that I hate the character and think he just sucks to, you know, all end.
But you know, it's not too often I hear you say this about any characters. Can you think of anybody else from the Vintage line that you find to be a bit lackluster? Because we all know fans in general will dump on a character we'll be talking about here in a few moments, along with Stinkor, Extendar, and Mechanek, you know.
Well, okay, the other character that I didn't get into much, and I know I'm probably going to catch flack, I enjoyed him when he popped up in the cartoon, but the Zodak figure, I remember as a kid when I had Zodak, he bored me. I was like, okay, he's got a cool gun, but all I would did, like I said, this was before the cartoon when I had Zodak, I would just go pew pew, and I pictured him shooting, but I was like, I just never got into Zodak. But
I also almost blame that probably because the character was so used virtually little to none.
Exactly. We didn't have much. We had him in the...
I don't know what the hell to do with him.
Right. I mean, we got him in, you know, the record book that came with, you know, Talon Fighter Point Dread, but even that wasn't much. So when he appeared in the cartoon and they made him this... Oh, of course, we had him in, you know, DC Comics as well. Yeah. Seeing him as a larger-in-life, this guy that only intervenes when, you know, it is really absolutely necessary. I told you, I always... That's when I embraced Zodak, because I was like, oh my God, he felt larger than life. You know, like, we know He-Man's the most powerful man in the universe, and he has all the heroic warriors to help him. But when Zodak showed up, I was like, oh my God. I mean, it's like this holy presence, so I love seeing him. The figure, when I first had it, not fun at all. But then the comics and the cartoon, they made me embrace him more. So yes, Zodak was unfortunately a victim of me not enjoying too much as a toy. But comics and cartoon helped that out, I guess.
I mean, I would like to see the character used similar to how he was in 2000X, but I felt like his interpretation of 2000X, he was a little too self-centered and not necessarily the wise cosmic enforcer. Like, when you say cosmic enforcer, I like to think of somebody on par with, like, Green Lantern. You know, not someone that stands by and watches and keeps the balance, but someone who actually is a cosmic enforcer, travels around, you know, enforcing, you know, the ways of good and justice throughout all over the universe, which is why he carries a pistol. Kind of like, you know, how John Atkin kind of, you know, like,
yeah.
About the character. But I
wish,
like,
he would have popped up in mini comics. I wish he would have been in mini comics.
I guess. Hell, he is the only vintage figure to never show up in a single mini comic. Hell,
I don't get it.
Got very few. Faker got one appearance. You know, Clank Champ got one appearance. Zodak got none. I guess it felt like, oh, it's not fair how, you know, this guy only got one appearance. This guy only got three. Man, Zodak got none.
Makes you think, damn, they should have at least took the storybook since it was drawn by Alcala. Like, maybe they should have shrunk it and did it into a little mini comic and then put it, you know, with, I don't know.
Like that, but hell, I mean, he was, it really makes you wonder, like, when, you know, that's something I guess we could ask Mark a little bit on, too. Like, how was it that Zodak was released in the first wave but pretty much registered obsolete aside from the three-part series, the record book, and an appearance in the the Sword of Skeletor Golden Book. I mean, he's not part of what the standard canon that most fans come to know. You know, they go through Filmation, the mini comics for the most part, and Zodak is just, he's just nowhere to be seen. And in Filmation, he gets three appearances, and they're good appearances, but still, it's just, he's so used so sparingly. It's easy for that character, I think, to be forgotten a lot because he's just, you know, I still like to see him as someone who would join in battle with He-Man and use his laser pistol and start taking out, you know, Skeletor's armies and the Horde troopers and things like that. And
yeah, because that's the thing.
With Triclops and Trapjaw or something like
that. No, and it would. It'd be cool because I'll admit, see, before the cartoon and we had just the toys, not only were we, using our imaginations, but those mini comics, since we're reading and seeing what's going on, you're recreating a lot of stuff that you're seeing in those mini comics. So it's easy to take some of your favorite characters like, you know, Beastman and Merman, Skeletor, He-Man, and having them do battle. And like I said, as for Stratos, I'd have him go like this and maybe imagine he's shooting lasers or power beams out of his hand. But we didn't have no Zodak to do that. So Zodak, as a kid, I was really left wondering, what the hell do I do with the guy? I just didn't know what to do. You know, like you said, it came to be in DC Comics to help a little, and of course Filmation, but before that, I was like, I don't know what to do with the guy. It's a shame, but he is a cool character, and then I
really didn't know what to make of Zodak either, because up until I saw Quest for He-Man, which was around the same time I saw the Evil Sea Wizard of Stone Mountain on VHS, I just seen him in the Sword of Skeletor book and in the VHS Golden Book with Sword of Skeletor, where he just shows up, and I'm young. I'm thinking, is he an enemy? Because he's Zach Tiemann into Grayskull. I can't read.
Then, right.
You know, and then I see the Golden Book VHS. I'm like, well, this is 3 or 4 year old mentality. Like, it kind of looks like he's trying to help He-Man, but zapping He-Man immediately in Grayskull where Skeletor is at, I didn't quite understand that he was doing it to help He-Man. So prior to that, I didn't know what the hell to make of the character. I mean, and it would be into the mid to late 90s before I'd
actually
The hell Zodiac's purpose was in the mythology.
Yeah, because then I was having him because, you know, I had that obsession of anytime we went to our local Kmart, not only for our figures, that was the place that I'd always get a new sticker storybook, coloring storybook or something, and he would make his appearances in that. And some of them had stories going on. So it was cool to have at least Zodiac in those as well, like the Evil Olympics, if I'm not mistaken. Not that he had a main part in that, but he did appear in that. And, of course, that was drawn by Alcala as well. So it was cool to have a little more Zodiac. And sometimes he would just pop up in another random sticker or coloring book. So, you know, those are kind of unfortunately overlooked, which they do have good stories. Some of them do. A lot of the coloring books, yes, were just random with tons of things to just color. But a majority of them, especially the early ones, had some kind of cool stories. You know, like when Skeletor is trying to marry Teela and make, you know, well, we've seen that before, but this one, it was kind of different as well. So they had some cool stories. But yeah, so Zodiac, that was the only other figure that didn't do it for me as a kid, but I grew to enjoy him much more than I did Stratos. But yeah, next week we'll talk about the betrayal of Stratos. That will be a good comment.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've mentioned it to Joe before. I'm afraid Joe's ducking me here. He's dodging this episode. It's probably because he's never seen it before. And I'm going to call him. I'm going to embarrass him publicly here. But I felt that that's such a great, as I got older, I really appreciated the Stratos story because to me as a kid, it was the first time I saw Whiplash in an episode. So that was a big deal to me. And plus, you see Triclops, Trapjaw, and Beastman with Skeletor on their it's been name checked before, but the name of their version of the Sky Sleds is it the War Sled or War Jet or not War Jet?
I'm sure we'll begin an answer here in a couple seconds.
Grimbach, if you're listening to this, because I've heard it called before, but it's never used in any episode of Filmation. You just see them riding on them. And I know there's a name for it. I believe it has something to do with war. And I didn't realize it until a few years ago, because it was just never mentioned.
Stuff James probably posted of original notes, like, here's the actual name.
Kept to himself, just so that way I'll know the name of it and nobody else will, just to piss me off.
Right. Give it a minute. I'm sure it'll pop up in the chat room. But, Delvis78, thank you for joining us.
It's a great Stratos episode, and I like the character of Hawk. Plus, I can't wait to talk to you about how Linda Gary does her voice, the way Hawk says pets in the episode. He made me want to whiplash his bitch. Like, I can't wait for you to watch that and for people who are listening to this. I can't wait because it's so great. She has such a menacing voice as Hawk in that episode. God, I love
it. We'll save it. We'll save it for next week. And also, Grimbot with a question mark said war sled, so maybe it's just the war sled. So. But he put a question mark,
that's what I thought it was. And then the Heroic Wars have the Sky Sled because it's the same thing, but the animal the emblem on the front, like the animal motif on the front, is different. It has like a snake.
Color difference from green and blue, or were they the same color?
Plus, there's an animal, a completely different look. Like the Skeletor's version has got like a snake on it, and then the Heroic Wars has got what we know to be the front of the battle ram. But I think it's War Sled. I think that's why, because I just don't hear it used much. So that's why I was like, you know what? I ain't afraid to admit I'm not 120% sure that it's War Sled. But if Grimbot thinks it might be War Sled too, then you know what? I can't be too far from the truth.
There you go. All right. So, okay. Well, those were that was our discussion on Stratos and much more, just like we always do. But now the final thing is a mini comic that you don't hear people talk about too much, and that's Eye of the Storm. And this is one that features, Snoutspout is kind of, I guess you want to say, in a way, one of the main characters, because it kind of revolves a little story around him.
I think the one that it came with was Snoutspout. I don't think it would have been, I don't think this was packed with the Star or anybody else part of the 86 wave.
There you go. So it's is mini comic. And what's crazy is just from the get-go, kind of, you know, the oh, woe is me, like he doesn't feel useful, like how they eventually did to Mechaneck and MYP, unfortunately. But
well, they do it to Deadar in the same, you know, in the snake attack.
Which I never understood. It's like, I don't, for me, as a kid, I still enjoyed the hell out of the character. But it's cool to have, like, Web Store kind of featured, you know, yeah, to a degree. And I think, it, I don't know if it's, God, Mitchell. I think Mitchell was the artist.
Jim Mitchell, which yeah.
He has a unique Skeletor. His Skeletor is different. Some people, not big fans of it, but I still think it's different. I appreciate it for what it is.
I like his Skeletor's fine. His Webster's fine. Yeah, I mean, overall, his style is fine. Like, he gives Snout Spout a very kind of serious look. Like, he doesn't have bad eyes.
Yeah, I want to say something about that for a quick second. I like that Stratos almost, excuse me, Jesus, I'm saying Stratos, I'm fucking still thinking about that. I'm sorry. Snout Spout, he did look, for me, a little more intense and evil, yep, only to find out then, years later, you know, here comes the internet, and you find out that the design was based off of Ted Mayer's original Snout Spout, and that's how he looks with this black and then the red eyes, and it made you wonder, did they think that would be too frightening for kids and it would make this heroic warrior look like an evil warrior? Because you wonder what would people's opinions been on the figure? Because some people want to joke, he just looks like a goofy metal elephant head. I don't like him. I loved him, but
oh God,
I wonder.
I was dying to have Snout Spout as a kid.
Yeah, and so that's what I mean. I love the hell out of the figure, but you wonder if he had that more intense look with the black, with the red eyes, and almost an angry expression, would they have respected the figure a little more? Maybe he wouldn't have got as joked as much. But yeah, I like how that was used. They used Ted Mayer's original design of Snout Spout to use for this mini comic. So if you guys haven't read it, you definitely have to read and see that look. And real quick, Grimbot did want to say it was called Doombuster. So that's the name of that thing. It's called the Doombuster.
Well, see, I thought the Doombuster was the name of the flight vehicle that was used in Shadow of Skeletor, which was like a brown airplane with a skeleton motif on it.
Well, he said on the model sheet, he said had Doombuster, but we'll see. We'll, he said, color in the color guide, it's called Doom Buggy. Oh, wow. This is going to have to be another episode. We'll have to get back to that. But, okay, well, back to Eye of the Storm. Now, what is Skeletor? He's using like a Stormbringer or some kind of device to where he's going to cause havoc on Eternia, correct? Is that the name of what it was called? Yep. Was it the... I liked seeing different things in it. Again,
is the technical term for what his device that Webster's helping him set up.
What did you say was the technical term?
Stormbringer.
Okay, Stormbringer. We see that. We also see in the comic, like I said, not going to ruin the whole story in case people haven't read, but there's like a game of glow disc that He-Man is playing against Extendar. And of course, they're trying to get the disc past one another into these like hoops that are hovering in the air. And I remember liking that because I love playing Frisbee. It's not like I'm going to go play Frisbee Doom, you know, glow disc outside, but I like seeing that they're doing this little thing back and forth with that. Also, you see Skeletor had some new kind of goggles. I just kept wondering, were they thinking of releasing any of these things for like merchandise or for, you know, like
would have been cool like, to release that along with like the Mega Laser and Steel Stalkers? Like, I think that'd have been a perfect accessory for Skeletor to use.
I liked it. I can't remember the exact name of what they called it, but it sure had a lot of cool like extensions, attachments. It was detailed. It wasn't just a simple little pair of goggles.
It was called binoculars.
Oh, spinoculars. You can't tell me that wouldn't have been you know, that sounds like the perfect.
Oh, yeah, it completely sounds like that was probably, I mean, I like to think it was going to be an accessory release with the Stilt Stalkers and Jet Sled.
Yeah, and it would. It looked like it should have been. Never happened, though. Just like, well, you think about, I think the Tower Tools, Scuba Attack, or whatever the hell, or Cliff Climber. Remember, we got those in some of the comics, but we never got those here in the United States. And when you found out years later, oh, those were released, you know, those were like European exclusives, or not exclusives, but released in other countries. It's like, oh, damn, why didn't we get those? We seen them in the comics, but we never got them here. So,
yeah.
But go ahead. I'll let you go to some of your thoughts on Eye of the Storm, because, like I said, I didn't want to read the whole thing and ruin
it. Well, no, I mean, it's a fine book. I mean, it's... I just wish they had gone down that route of you got this very badass looking cyborg elephant, and we have to have him watch He-Man and Xtendar compete in the game, somehow makes him think, oh man, I'm about as useless as, tits on a boar, to quote the movie Casino. You know, just one of the things, like, it just seems so, I mean, am I supposed to relate to Snout Spout as a kid? Had I gotten this as a kid and see this story? I mean, obviously it's a story. I get the story they're trying to tell here, but when the vast majority of the many comics that we all got, all the new heroes that we are given are portrayed very proudly, competently, and very strong. You don't see anybody from Roboto to Many Faces to Buzz Off, Mechaneck. Everybody is portrayed in a very strong manner. But for some reason, when we get to 1986, you got Xtendar and Snout Spout, both looking at, I mean, not initially, but in Snake Attack, when Extendor's like, I don't know, I don't think I'm worthy to be a heroic warrior and be honored by the king and queen. And, oh man, I didn't have what it takes to save him. It just, you know, stop making these characters such whiners.
It's almost like they were using, in a way, a similar storyline to show maybe these characters are, woe is me, I'm not important enough, and then eventually they get to show their power, and now they're powerful. It's like, but you're doing the same kind of story, but twisting it and changing it to fit that particular character. Because, yeah, you're right, Xtendar, I remember when I first seen just the figure itself in that package, I'm seeing this big hulking knight looking warrior. I was like, oh my god, that's one massive sucker. It looked impressive. And then only to take him out of package and extend him out, and he got gigantic. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. And the same thing with Snout Spout. Right when I seen him in package, I was like, what is this thing? I don't know what it is. But then you look at the back and it's like, oh, you fill water, it shoots and knocks down its enemies. It's like, you know, of course the commercials show that well, where they're showing Snout Spout attacking well, but I was right behind it from the get-go. But yeah, to tell the pitiful story for them, but then showcase, okay, you know, like, I'm worthless, and Tila's, you know, reassuring them, well, you're our firefighter, your attorney's firefighter, and you are worth something. And of course, then...
With no sense, when he's watching, you know, like, what am I... So when I watch basketball, I'm supposed to feel like, man, I'm worthless, because I can't be on the
same... You can't dunk, yeah.
You know, like, no, it makes no sense. You know, I just, not that I'm saying that this is an awful story, because it's not, but I just, it's one of those things where I always have looked at these guys as definitive macho men, like guys you would want to be in battle with when you fantasize as a kid. You want to be He-Man and team up with Snout Spout and Clank Champ and Roboto. You don't picture these guys as guys who, here goes Snout Spout. I got a box of tissues here, man. They're, buck up there, bud. You know, you don't see them as anything less than what you as a young boy, you know, like, man, I see, you know, pure macho with these guys. So I don't want to see any of these characters, not to dehumanize them. I don't, that's not why I'm into He-Man. That's why we had the Prince Adam He-Man character scenario, where we're dealing with the problems of, you know, maintaining a secret identity. I don't want to see issues with these characters, because that's not going to make me find them relatable. They're relatable because I want to be, you know, I would want to be like Fisto. I would want to be as strong and badass as Clan Champ, or being like Roboto as a kid. I thought that would have been awesome, or be like Buzz Off and had claws and wings.
You're right. It's almost like it wasn't needed. I could see the story working
again. Not warranted.
No, that's what I mean. I feel like the story could have worked almost exactly the same as it was without the old Pidian thing. If you could just picture Snout Spout is back. Wait, and yeah, sure, here's Xtendar and He-Man. They're playing games. They're enjoying themselves in hell. Even let's say Snout Spout was a observer of what's going on. But then when Skeletor uses the Stormbringer and start causing this havoc and fire and lightning, then Snout Spout knows, okay, now it's time for me to join into battle and do what he did anyways. He saved the day. He took care of, you know, got rid of the fire. He sat there and he grabbed Webstorm and flung him into Skeletor as he's flying the Wind Raider. So he's a competent pilot. He knows what he's doing. It's like, I feel like they could have just wrote almost the same story, but just take out the parts of pitying myself and just have these warriors ready for battle. They're trying to have a day on Eternity where maybe that's just peaceful. They want to relax and enjoy themselves. There's nothing bad going on. Why can't people enjoy themselves and do a sport? And then, of course, here's Skeletor. He would come to ruin the day, causing all this havoc, and then they jump right into battle. That's what I wish could have happened, because I don't think it brought anything to the character except just kind of joking, like, oh boy.
He
was always good.
Really putting out fires. Like, they label him as the firefighter, but he's not really putting out fires. There's just lightning striking, but there's no fires being.
Yeah, I caught that too. I know what you mean.
Maybe they drew fires in other, like in Spike Horse Strikes. When Spiker's, ravaging the village to get He-Man's attention, the village is on fire. So it's like one of those things where, are you afraid to show fire in the mini comics because kids are like, oh, look, the good guys are trying to put out the fire. I better go start a fire,
If you wouldn't even be a sarcastic person, you could say, okay, this lightning is hitting He-Man, and if it's electrical, if Snoutspot shot his water, not only would it shoot back up into him and electrocute him, it'd electrocute He-Man, if you wanted to be a smart aleck.
I kind of feel like Snoutspot is not used to his full potential, and I think it's one of those things that the character sorely needs, is he needs a really good story. I mean, that's one of the things I like doing with Axel, is like when I do illustration with him, I pick characters that I feel like people, when they see it, they're like, oh, wow, you know what? That character would look really cool in classics form. Or that's why I picked Azrog in a few pictures. If people see Azrog drawn in a, of course, Return of Broker's Uncle is one of the best episodes that's ever been done. But for people who are not sold on that design, you show them in a different light. I feel like fans can be much more accepting and would want to see more, and that's what Snoutspout needs. He needs to be shown in the light where he is the badass firefighter, and I don't want to see that he's human underneath that. I like to think of him as a humanoid elephant, because we got all these other characters that are human, they're animal-like. He doesn't need to be human. I accept the fact, like how the Horseman did it. He's an elephant man with like elephant feet, but he's got humanoid hands and a elephant head that's probably enhanced with cybernetic equipment due to the injuries, kind of like with Rotar.
Yeah, it's a fan, like you said, it's a world of fantasy. You can just clearly accept it. Yeah,
and see this guy, with his axe and the jaws of life, breaking into stuff and helping save the day, and then fighting off Cobra Khan and Web Store from causing even more havoc. I see Snoutspout is just as much a badass as Cyclone and Mossman and Clamchamp.
I never looked at him as worthless ever. This comic,
not once. And I still to this day, you get people that will just chime in with, I got my 2 cents. See this guy on social media who decided to post that how much he loves the car over Snoutspout because it looks cool. I need to let him know that I think Snoutspout sucks, because you know what? My opinion matters even more than yours. You get what I'm saying here? Because I think he sucks.
And he's... Oh, he is. He's a great...
Oh, boy. Enlighten us all with that. Have we never heard that before?
Great character, great figure. And like I said, this is a good story. Even though, like I said, it has its woe is me, but it still ends up being a good story. It is. The only thing that drove me nuts in this... Here's another little pet peeve. If you always talk about things that Joe would look at that drove him nuts. It was him flying the Wind Raider. Now,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's big as the Wind Raider.
That's what I mean, because... The toy, I love the vehicle. You put He-Man in it, but it still feels big. But damn it, if some depictions of that Wind Raider in the past, including some of the amazing puzzle art that you would see from R.L. Allen, they would draw the Wind Raider like he's in a little carnival ride, like he's just stuck right in there and can barely fit. It's like the Wind Raider's like this, and Snoutspout is almost as big as it. And that's the only thing that drove me nuts. Hell, maybe the artist, Mitchell, maybe he seen some other depictions of people in the Wind Raider in other pieces of art and used it, but that's the only thing that killed me, was him
He probably was told, like, we got to include him on a flying vehicle, and it was just one of those things where, as an artist, you're doing the basic story, but you're told we got to have him flying around here, so you got to cram it. It makes no sense. When I first got this mini comic years ago, I noticed that. I'm like, that makes no sense whatsoever, but I'm sure it may have been like a last-minute addition where you got to try and squeeze in Snoutspout instead of running around because you've got Web Source, Skeletor, and He-Man on the ground. We got to get I'm trying to find logic behind it, but it's still
it's small. If you guys haven't seen it, trust me, you'll love when you read Eye of the Storm. It's still a fun comic.
The Wind Raider is like this cozy little vehicle. You just kind of like all wrap yourself up in, just go for a ride in it,
Like one of those little kiddie cars, like when you were a kid and you'd hop in your little mini.
But again,
it is
part rides like that have the Wind Raider, the Fright Fighter, or the sky sled, and then you just get on it, and then you just go up. It lifts you up in the air, and you kind of go up and down in the air in a big circle. Like,
could you picture that? Because, you know, when you were at the carnival and you'd fly in those little mini airplanes that would go in the circle up and down, every one of those Masters flying vehicles would have been perfect. Like you said, you could have had, you know, the Wind Raider. You could have been in the Rotan and the one in front of that, the evil ones and good vehicles, and gone all up in a circle. Yeah. Those could have been cool if they had a Masters Universe themed ride at a carnival.
Or a carousel that had Stridor, Night Stalker, Panthor, and Battle Cat. Oh, my God.
Cool. You got throwing Panthor. You got throwing Panthor in there. The cool stuff. You know what was funny? I think somebody posted from, I believe it was Mexico. They had a, out of all things, I thought it was a carousel or some ride that would go around in a circle. And there were these seats, and when you got into them, they looked like He-Man. You're sitting like on a He-Man carnival ride. And through the years, I think they've actually modified it. Like, they recently changed up the He-Man one, painted it, and for some reason put WWE.
Share this a while back, like a couple weeks ago, or somebody share something like that, because I remember seeing pictures of what you're describing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Somebody showed a modified one, which pissed me off. Yes. They actually, that's what got me mad. I was like, why did you guys ruin that perfectly awesome vintage ride you created of He-Man, and now you turned it into a WWE themed thing? I was like, yeah. Why did you do that? Wrecked it. But yeah, so if you guys haven't read Eye of the Storm, like I said, find the mini comic, get the Dark Horse book that has the whole entire collection. You can find this easily, and it's a good story. It's overlooked, and the art
This is what you need here, people. This is your guide to everything here.
You ain't kidding.
And you pick it up. Holy crap.
Yeah, it has it all. It's not disgusting art to look at. It's a unique kind of take on looks of Skeletor. Skeletor has been the one that there's been some misses, but usually they're mostly hits. Even if it's so different with the face of some of them, I still can appreciate how different some of these interpretations are. There's been some disgusting ones that just really had weird, like, fate. Like, what the hell happened to the face?
Well, like we said, it makes me think of how he's depicted in Fastest Straw in the Universe. Like, you know, he's got, I mean, he looks fine, but it's another drastic look. But yeah, I will say, for the most part, Skeletor is drawn pretty consistently well. Variations, yes, they are all over the place. Some are better than others. But it's not like, you know, Hordak being drawn like an old man missing his teeth. You know,
that was pretty much a doozy. That old man looked like his face was kind of melting in the teeth. And yes, exactly.
Like, you know, before asking people, ask me about my grandchildren.
Right, but so definitely.
Morning, talking about, you know, the government.
The government. Well, I was going to say, if you guys have any questions in the chat room, now's your time to go ahead and type them in. We'll cover anything from the cartoons, comics, toys, to movie. But also, while they'd be typing something out, if they had questions, JSP, he had a question, and I didn't see this. He says, did you guys see the cover pick for the PowerCon 2018 program guide?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did see that.
I missed it. What is it? What was it?
Yeah, Axel had done using the original Mark Taylor designs of He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Skeletor, Beastman, and drew them in front of Grayskull and did like a recreation of He-Man and the Power Swords, a mini comic cover by Ocala.
No way. I didn't know.
Grayskull in the back, but it's surrounded by clouds, as if like Castle Grayskull is at the edge of a really high mountain peak. Like, it's so high up, and then you're on this plateau, and straight back is Castle Grayskull surrounded by clouds. And He-Man with the Viking helmet, and Beastman looking like the red Beastman, kind of the red ape-like character with the original. I mean, it looks awesome. Just badass work, man. I mean,
I'm going to have to check it out, because JSP said it's on their website, so I'll have to check that website to see it. I don't know how I missed that. That's almost insane. I usually see.
You're a fan, Joe.
I'm not a real fan. Flip everything right now. I'm out of here. Just turn it off.
Flip over. Just stop everything. This podcast is over.
That's it.
Post.
So, okay, and let me see. Zentron said, which characters' personalities in Filmation's He-Man She-Ra did you dislike, and how would you have changed them? Well, it was a product of just bad timing, meaning, you know, you have Spike Orr turn into the biggest oaf in the world, and the way he spoke, it's like that's not the Spike Gore I was expecting and ever wanting to see in the cartoon, especially with having the figure, especially after seeing him in the mini comics, and you could just see this nasty evil look and just an evil warrior, but a blacksmith, and just wonder what kind of crazy weapons could he have created? How evil could he have sounded if that whole parent group's toning the cartoons down wasn't involved? I would have loved to see Spike Gore in a different, more menacing light, his personality and everything.
Yeah, too bad. It was pretty weak for me too. Just because, you know, the blue head's got a big goofy smile on his face, you know, and Yellow Band is just, you know, has a very, very soft voice. Nothing menacing. I mean, everything, I mean, physically, like when you see Too Bad walking, like you feel like if they had just drawn the faces a bit more menacing instead of kind of dumbing them down, it would look really, really badass. But you know, that was not to be had. So yeah, if Joseph Spike or I gotta say Too Bad, because Too Bad's my favorite evil warrior. As much as I've complained about Teela, I still feel like Teela could be written a lot more likable. You could still make her a bit of a hard ass because she is a great warrior that can hold her own. But I feel like they wrote her so much where she's like, oh my god, will someone put a gag in this woman's mouth? She just won't shut the hell up. You know, you've got so many likable women on He-Man with Marlena and the Sorceress, Evil-Lyn, and the vast majority of She-Ra's entire cast, from the Evil Horde to the Great Rebellion. Teela is just written to, I mean, many, many high levels of obnoxious. It's just like, God, it's just anytime you got an open wound, she comes by with a salt dump truck and decides to just dump the whole thing on the big open wound here. Because they just made her so unlikable. Period. It's I can.
Well, there, I guess we know you.
Yeah. Here we go. If I keep talking, we won't get to other people's questions. But yes, that's it in a nutshell.
All right. Okay. I think I pretty much know how I'll say this real quick. But Toki Deathhammer said, "How would you reimagine Filmation Adam for a new generation?" Well, that's the thing. For me, Prince Adam, I mean, well, remember, it's not just really Filmation Adam, because it started off in the DC comics first. I mean, that's where you've seen Prince Adam first, was the DC comics. Now, his character was pretty similar, almost just like you've seen in the cartoon. Now, did you notice the carousing or wanting to be with women as much in Filmation? You did see it, because like you said, he was trying to get with
people. You do see it. It's referenced a lot.
You do. Now, yeah. It looks like a little more obvious in the DC comics, and he does look like he's a real ladies' man, but, I mean, I really wouldn't change it. I would
give you at least 4 or 5 examples right now of Adam being depicted as a ladies' man.
And I like it. That's what I mean. So keep him as kind of a ladies' man. Don't have him, if anything, maybe be obvious about wanting to do the whole Clark Kent Superman bumbling stuff so nobody can catch on. Maybe they could lay off that a little. And also, as for his outfit, myself, I preferred in the DC, I did like the blue vest. I mean, I spoke with one time, I believe, you know, when I was talking with Grimbot about this, he said maybe the blue would have clashed with, you know, King Randor's blue, so that's why they went with a pink. But I like the blue. It looked like it fit him so much better in DC, so I mean, for me, just maybe tone down a little of the bumbling aspect. Let him still be a ladies' man. Have a different colored outfit. And I don't know. That's my choice, because I just always loved the blue. I love that damn blue he had.
I mean, I've always been fine with, you know, of course, I'd have to deal with people making fun of Prince Adam's look by saying he doesn't look, you know, macho and he's wearing pink and purple. I'm like, you know, it's always been so acceptable to me as a kid, because I just, that's how the look I was introduced. And then, you know, you come to realize that the royal colors is why what he's wearing. It's not to say that he's a feminine character or anything like that. It's just the royals he's wearing there. And I mean, when I watch it now, I still see it as like, that's the look of Prince Adam. But if you're going to change Prince Adam for, yes, I would change it up, so that way there's no possibility of new generations laughing and saying that this young man who will become the strongest man in the universe is anything less than the epitome of masculinity, because that, to me, that's what He-Man is, and Adam is the embodiment of that. And with Adam, I would ramp up his affinity for women. You know, like you know, when Randor's like looking for him, you see Adam is off in the courtyard with, you know, like with two women, you know, one on each arm, or they're laughing, or he's got a real pretty brunette, you know, outside the royal palace, you know, flirt. I don't know. You just constantly paint that image up as if like he would rather be chasing and flirting with women, and yeah, nix the whole bumbling thing. We don't need to see him as just like he's just oh my god, I don't know how to walk, you know.
Yeah, because it was just too close to, like you said, like how Clark Kent had to act extra bumbling, look like he's tripping on things, always doing stupid stuff. It's like, I know it's an act, but it's just something that never really appealed to me too much. What? Oh, just be, that's the only way you can separate to, oh, okay, if they think I'm He-Man, this is how you will never guess that I'm He-Man. And I'm going to trip, you know.
That has to be given the blame on Filmation of like, well, you know, and we see him flirting with women. We see him, it's referenced a lot in certain episodes too of his pursuit of women, but they just don't use it enough. And I think portraying him as someone that I would rather be chasing skirts, you know, and then, you know, taking naps here and there on occasion, or, you know, be caught down at the tavern, you know, talking with buddies and trying to pick up women, as opposed to he runs in the court and slips on a banana peel and then falls into the royal trash can. And, you know, I don't, you know, just let's not see it that way, because he's not incompetent. I think that's not going to trick people into thinking that, hey, he's not He-Man, because clearly he acts like a blithering idiot.
He's
interested in chasing the blonde and brunette down the hallway than sitting in on King Randor's private meeting with Man at Arms and Mechanek about, you know, how are we going to retrieve the Diamond Ray disappearance? That's how you throw that away.
That's what you said. He could be completely normal. Like you said, he could still be a completely normal character like all the other thousands and thousands of people on Eternia. It's like, just be normal.
Like Bruce Wayne and Batman. Bruce Wayne doesn't act like a moron.
That's what I mean. You don't have to
businessman and the ladies, man.
Right. You don't have to act stupid. Yeah. You don't have to act stupid and bumbling to make people think that's a different character. It's like, it's not really needed. So yeah, just get rid of that part and I think we're fine. But
yeah.
All right, let's see if we Delva78 said, did anyone notice how down upon Mossman was looked at by everyone but the Masters? Delvis, what did you mean? Did you mean from cartoon or mini comics or what? I guess I never really, I don't know. I never seen that. Did you catch that? I mean,
I'm wondering if he means like in the episode here, there's Skeletors everywhere, like, or like an ancient Mare of Abathur, like where I think Malakth is not too fond of Mossman, or like when, and here there's Skeletors everywhere when he shows up, you know, as pretending to be a bush when they're doing their secret meeting of like the machine that Man at Arms makes, and they say, Mossman, you can't be here. You know, and Mossman's just sleeping. And like, all right, I'll take off. And then Orko's like, no matter what, Mossman's still a spy. I'm like, why is Man at Arms and Orko busting Mossman's balls in this episode? Like, they just go out in the wilderness and happen upon the bump into like Mossman's like resting place. I'm like, the guy's sitting there sleeping.
You know, it's funny. Beyond sniffing him, I'm glad you brought that up, Delvis. Mossman was another character I really didn't know what the hell to do with as a kid. I was like,
what? Are you nuts? God, I'm not to have Mossman.
Oh, no, that's the thing. I was like, oh, man, I love the smell of him. He's cool. And I used to like camouflaging him. I would always put him by Castle Grayskull, and I would have somebody going by Castle Grayskull, an evil warrior, and suddenly, boom, Mossman would pop out. So I had that kind of fun. But beyond having him camouflage, I was like, never played with him a lot. But hell, MYP sure did a great interpretation of Mossman. They really jacked him up with being freaking cool with power. So work there, I guess. But all right, well, those were our questions in the chat room. So again, thanks, guys, for your questions. And before we wrap it up, you got any closing stuff you want to say for us, Tyler?
I always like to remind Kevin Sharp, check out his artwork. He's taking commissions right now. If you guys are interested in getting some, I used his Stratos to advertise this week's episode in a lot of Facebook pages. So if you like what you saw, contact Kevin on Facebook and hit him up. See if you want him to draw Triclops or Beastman, or if you want him to draw Zodak for you or Plant Champ, who knows? If you're in the mood for that, hit him up on Facebook. Let's see here. I don't think I really got anything else. Check out Joe Amato's Customs, of course. Oh, I will say this. If you you love our podcast and you want to take it on the go with you, we are available on iTunes. And over many months, occasionally we get questions about where are we on iTunes. And we're on iTunes if you look up Pop Culture Network. And if you just type in Pop Culture Network on the search on iTunes, you'll get all of our episodes of Fans of Power, and then you'll get the other podcast that Joe and I do. If you like what me and Joe have to say on here, we do Beyond Retro, where we talk about movies of the 80s and 90s and TV shows and various other things. And then I do one with my buddy Nathan Kennedy, who's on Beyond Retro with us, called Capes and Commentaries. All that material, where we do commentaries on various cartoons of the 80s and 90s, all that's available on iTunes. So if you don't use Podbean and you don't have the time to sit and watch them on YouTube, you don't want to use data, or you don't have an iPad with you or desktop at your disposal, all of our material is available on iTunes. Just search for Pop Culture Network. Everything that we've done will all pop up. You can download them all for free on iTunes. That way you can use them and not have to, if you don't want to use Podbean or YouTube, there's a third option to listen to every episode of Fans of Power.
Yeah, because I have quite a few fans asking me, not on iTunes? I look for Fans of Power and I can't find you. It's like, no, you can't find us under Fans of Power. Like you said, SB Pop Culture Network. Then you can find from there. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So thanks
for bringing it. Yeah, I meant to say that because Doug had uploaded our Capes and Commentaries from yesterday, where we discussed the Funhouse from G.I. Joe Season 1. And, all right. But it just made me think that, you know what, I really need to hammer home to our listeners that you can download us on iTunes and listen to us on your iPhone or your iPod or your iPad, and you don't have to, and you can just keep downloading a bunch all at once. They're right there in the same spot. I've never used Podbean, so I'm assuming it's maybe similar like that. But if you don't have a Podbean account, or you haven't used Podbean, or you decide, you know what, you'd rather have us on the go, if you don't have or don't use Podbean, everything's available on iTunes. Just want to hammer that home for anybody who's wondering about that. And you just don't have time to sit for an hour and a half to 2 hours on YouTube while watching us. So
perfect. No, definitely. Thanks for sharing that and letting everybody know about the other podcasts as well. But
we don't plug the other two podcasts that much. I'm like, why the hell aren't I doing that?
It's just something that sometimes goes right over our head. But well, before I thank everybody and wrap it up, Zentron did have a movie quote. He said, "This is nothing but a price I promised myself I'd pay, and I'm paying it." I don't know what that is.
Don't know that one either.
This is nothing but a price I promised myself I'd pay, and I'm paying it. Well, I do not know that, Zentron. If anybody else knows that, hopefully they can. You'll have to give us the answer. If somebody first, we'll see if somebody guesses it there in the chat room. But otherwise, no, I do not know that one. But okay, well, again, I just want to thank. I want to thank everybody that joined us here in the chat room this week. I hope we were able to at least cover all your questions. Hope you enjoyed hearing what we had to say. And he said it's from Sin City. Everybody will hate me.
I haven't seen Sin City in years. So yeah, I've seen it multiple times, but just not enough to where I have any quotes memorized from that.
I've seen part of it just in the hopes that, hey, is Jessica Alba, is she going to be nude in this or something? Okay, well, then I'm not watching it. That was my main thing. I had a thing for her, good guy from Dark Angel. I still do. That's why I wish I'd see her in more stuff or in less stuff, if you know what I mean. Well, what am I saying? Okay. Well, again, thank you for joining us, everybody in the chat room. Hope you enjoyed this, and we'll hope to see you next week. So until next time, have a powerful day.
What if someone calls my mama a whore? Is she?
What? Oh my God, I'm going to feel bad. And Tyler's going to say, Joe, you should have known that. I don't know it. I'll wait to see if somebody can get that in the chat room. We always give 30 seconds for somebody to do it before Tyler reveals it, but I do not know this one. But can you say it again? Well,
I'm not gonna bust your balls on this one because you've already said I think you've seen it, but probably something you haven't seen much.
Can you say it one more time, though?
What if someone calls my mama a whore? Is she?
I don't know. Nobody's popped up in the chat room with it, so they must not know where. No, wait, I'm still waiting, but I've seen nothing. No, nobody's. Wait a second. Nope, nobody's getting it. You're going to have to. What is it?
Roadhouse.
Oh, God, of course. That's why I didn't see it. Yeah. I mean, know it. I've seen Roadhouse maybe once. Yeah, probably.
I know that's the case.
Yes. All right, guys. Well, you both got me.
disappoint.
I do it every week, so see you guys next time.